trouble we are in? Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace. I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me, and what the king had said to me. They replied, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. What is this you are doing? They asked. Are you rebelling against the king? I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it.
So I didn't see the hands. How many didn't have heard that before? Do you know, that's what I thought would be the case. When Janet and I considered it, we thought, oh, they're all going to think that's old hat. We always sing that one. And then we're shocked to find that so few people knew it. Waiting. You're always excited about waiting, aren't you? Waiting is our most favourite topic. I don't know whether I've ever told you this, but I hate fishing with a passion. Well, actually, it's actually not fishing. I actually really enjoy fishing. You know, when the line goes in the water, you catch a fish and pull it in. That's fun. It's the other bit, the bit that's not fishing. I would describe it as sitting in a boat with a line in the water time. It's not fishing. It's just hanging around, and you have to sit, and you just sit. And then after you finish sitting, doing nothing, you sit and do nothing for a little bit longer. That is exciting stuff. So it's this not fishing that I really struggle with, this idea of waiting. So today we're going to be talking about waiting, but you'll be pleased to know it's not like waiting for a bus, or it's not like waiting for a train, or it's not like waiting for the TV repairman to turn up, or the internet provider to switch your internet service back on. It's not that kind of waiting. Today what we're going to be looking at is the sense in which there's a time in which we've got a job to do as we wait for the Lord, preparing ourselves for God to do the work, which is the centerpiece of this series. Preparing ourselves, we've got a job to do as we wait. So it's not sitting around doing nothing, there is a job to do. But before we talk about that, let's have a bit of a run through on this series. In week one, we saw how the Israelites were allowed to return home. Oh, we've got to get all the kids out. Didn't we go out to Sunday school? What's going on there? Oh, Mitchell. Oh, dear. You know what? He's right. It was on the list to go communion first. So it's... There we go. My mistake again. I confess again. There we go. There we go. I'm going to pay for that. Mitch is going to let me know that for a long time. Anyway, moving right on back to the sermon. Week one, we saw how the Israelites were allowed to return back home, turn to Jerusalem, and everyone went there except Nehemiah, and probably a few others, but Nehemiah had to stay back because he had to help the king. He needed to continue to be the cupbearer. Now, we're not sure whether Nehemiah chose to stay or whether the king said, you're not going anywhere. But needless to say, he stayed there. But he had this heavy heart. He had this sadness because he just knew that he wanted to make his way home, and he wanted to find out what Jerusalem was like. He wanted to know that condition. Then his brother came for a visit with news of Jerusalem. And if his heart was heavy beforehand, his heart was heavier after he heard the news of the condition of Jerusalem. But as his brother came, it's almost like his brother came with one intent, and that intent was to get Nehemiah. It's like his brother came because Nehemiah was the go-to man. No one in Jerusalem knows what to do. Go get Nehemiah. He'll be the one who knows what to do. And so there's a sense in which he's the go-to man. He always seemed to know what to do. He always gave wise counsel. He always seemed to know God's way and God's heart. He appeared to be a leader, whether he had the title or not. So then we saw the way in which they went and got Nehemiah. The next part we looked at was in chapter 2, verses 1 to 10, and in particular, in verses 4 and 5, we saw 3 points. Very simple points, but very appropriate. The king asked, "What is it you want?" And it seemed like a pretty straightforward question, but there was a lot at stake in that question. And so not only then did the king ask what you want, the second point was that Nehemiah prayed. We quickly worked out he didn't have too much time to pray. It's not like he could wait for the prayer meeting on Wednesday night. He, in that moment, needed to pray. He didn't bow his head. He didn't close his eyes. But there was a very tangible, real prayer that he prayed to God. Not a word spoken, not a moment of time, but his spirit connected with the Spirit of God. And then we see that Nehemiah responded. What God told him to say is what Nehemiah said. As we're approaching people, particularly those that are wanting to challenge us about our Christian faith, or those people who are wanting to find answers, for us to just take that moment to stop and to pray, and then to respond a wise words of counsel. So now that that's all sorted, he went and he talked to the king, and the king said, "Yeah, I'll give you a letter of approval to go through the land, and you can get as much timber as you need." So now that that's all sorted, we get to today's passage. So this week's going to be easy. It's going to be a lot easier for Nehemiah now. This week's going to be a breeze compared to everything else that he's had to deal with. This is going to be a walk in the park. Because why? The king has given permission to go. The king has given Nehemiah letters for free passage through a hostile land. The king has given him a letter to get all the timber he needs to rebuild the gates. And above all else, this God had asked him to go to Jerusalem, to go build the walls. And so he knows that the job's been given to him by God. He's got the vision for that. He's got the resources. This is going to be easy. Everything is in place right now. He has his calling. He has the authority. So then the question has to be asked, if he's got permission, if God's given him the direction, why doesn't he just arrive in Jerusalem, riding on his great white steed, and turn up and say, "Hi everybody, it's Nehemiah here. It's Nehemiah here. Guess what we're going to be doing tomorrow? We're going to be rebuilding the walls. We're going to be repairing the gates. It's going to be terrific. So get yourself ready. Make sure you've got your work clothes. Make sure you pack a lunch and make sure you've got plenty of water. Make sure you got your hard hats and your WHS certificates are all in place. And because tomorrow it's going to start." And you would think that because he's got the authority of God, he could have walked in and done that. And of course, everyone in all of Jerusalem would have said, "Great, Nehemiah, we're with you." I don't think so. I think everyone would have said, well, who are you? Who are you and who do you think you are that you can walk in here? You don't know what we've been through. You don't know the struggles that we have been facing. You don't even know what's going on here. We've been living in these circumstances for some time, but what about you? You've been living in that fancy palace, drinking as much wine as you like, just to test us to make sure the king is safe. You've been living in that luxury, and here we are struggling, and you don't know what we're going through. You couldn't even be bothered to come home with us. On top of that, you need to know that we're pretty tired from trying to maintain this place. We're pretty tired from having to constantly put another brick in the wall just to see that there's another problem somewhere else. We're pretty tired of always having to put a security guard up around these walls just to make sure that we're not getting attacked by someone. People are tired from being up all night trying to guard us. You don't know any of that. You just waltz here and declare, "God said, and let's do it." Who made you the boss? Who gave you authority to walk in and speak those words? I actually think there's lots of times in history, lots and lots and lots of times in history, where God's plans have taken a lot longer to fulfill because there have been people who have just almost arrogantly declared, "God said,
So let's just do it. Rather than waiting on the Lord for the Lord to also be in the process. You see, the Lord who gives the vision, the Lord who gives the task to be done, is also a God who gives us the process as well. And so we know that as God gave the vision, as God gave the plan, he also spoke into Nehemiah's heart and said, there is a process you need to follow. I know it's a passage that we use a lot, and rightly so. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. But the phrase doesn't just say the end result of a good man is ordered by the Lord. It says each of the steps are ordered by the Lord. He is in the process. It's every single step. The process matters as much to God as the end result. In fact, so much so that it is all about the process, because the process brings about the end result. Let's use as a perfect example Jesus Christ himself. There was one ultimate task for Jesus Christ to do, and that was to come, die on a cross, and pay the price of our sins. How much easier would it have been if that was all that was needed, Jesus just turn up one day and say, I'm not going to waste my time with these other 33 years of living on this earth. I'm not going to worry about that whole getting born to a virgin and then having these shepherds coming and wise men and all of those struggles and then having to put up with nuisance disciples who never listen to what I say anyway. Why don't I just turn up one day and I'll just hop up on a cross, die, get down again, go back to heaven, job's done. And then everyone's sins have been forgiven and we don't have to worry about all the rubbish. Because as silly as that sounds, it could have been that way. But of course, the process mattered every bit as much. Because as Jesus spoke to people, he transformed lives. He's helped us to see how we need to live. He's shown what's required to live a godly life. And we're eternally thankful not just for the fact that we have salvation when we accept Jesus Christ as our Saviour. We're also eternally thankful for the fact that he is showing us the way in which we should live. Nehemiah needed to know three things, and that's why Kerry read the passage for us, because there were some things that Nehemiah needed to know, and that's why he went through the process of that passage which you have before you in verses 11 to 16. You see, Nehemiah needed to know. He needed to know what God had actually called him to. Secondly, Nehemiah needed to understand the situation. Thirdly, he needed to know the best way forward, the process that God would have him follow. Now, it doesn't say in this particular passage his emotional state, but from what we read in chapter 1, you can rest assured this whole situation has really distressed him. And as he's walking around, as he's going around these walls, he's riding on horseback, and sometimes he has to get off because of the rubble. As he gets to each new segment, each new bit of wall that's broken, each gate that's burned, you can just imagine his heart's breaking at each and every moment. He can remember how beautiful it once looked. He can remember how special it all was. He needed for himself to see. And he needed to know what was before him. You can rest assured, by the time he had finished his journey that night, he knew the situation better than anyone else in Jerusalem. He knew the state of the situation. He knew the state of the people. And so this was not just filling in time one night. This was his opportunity to know that he knew everything was going on. He knew better than anyone. And this is highlighted by his very specific description of the state of the wall and how he looked at each and every part of it, how he went everywhere, how he could only walk because the rubble was so bad. He knew the situation, he knew what God was calling him to. verse 16, we read, the officials did not know where I had gone or where I was going, because as yet I'd said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or officials or anyone else who would be doing the work. Clearly he needed to know. But he didn't need to know because he was going to decide whether he was going to do the job or not. That had already been sorted. And I think one of the first things that we need to understand is that we need to sort out right from the word go. No matter what tomorrow has in store for us, we need to commit ourselves to knowing that we will do God's will tomorrow. We might not know exactly what it looks like, but we are committing ourselves to do it. Nehemiah had committed himself to doing this task, regardless of how easy or how hard it was. The second reason he didn't take all of these people with him, all of the Jewish people and the officials, he didn't need the voice of no on that first evening. As he went around, he didn't need people saying to him, forget it, yeah, we can't do this. There's no shortage of people who will find good reasons as to why we shouldn't do something. There are plenty of people who can say no. There always is a long list of them. Lots of people who can find very good reasons, and they're probably not wrong in what they're saying as to why this job couldn't be done. You see, if it had started with taking these people with him, if it had taken these people with him, then the wall would never have got restored, because everyone would have seen the broken down state rather than what could be restored. You see, if these people had it in them to rebuild the wall, they would have been rebuilding the wall. But at this point in time, when Nehemiah turns up, everyone is just feeling sorry for themselves. Everyone's just looking at the broken down walls. Everyone's just looking at the burn gates. Everyone's just looking at the pile of rubble. And in a depressed state, they're all saying, can't be done. And so if Nehemiah had taken these people with him, that's who he would have been taking with him. Mission impossible. Nehemiah needed to be careful which voice he listened to. The voice of God himself, or the voice of no. So Nehemiah now knows the wall, he knows the situation, he knows the call of God in his life. And at this point in time, we have verse 17. Then, having gone through this process of having waited, but having gone through the process while he waited, then I said to them, see the due process? After all of that, then he said to them, in some ways, he could speak to them then because he had earned the right to be heard. And I really appreciate the first words he actually speaks to the people. The first words he speaks to the people are these. You see the trouble we're in? Well, yes, they do. But what he's really declaring is, I see the trouble we're in. You see the trouble we're in. We can all see the trouble we're in. So we're starting from the same point, but I have a different story to tell past that statement. He actually then says, come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And I'm really captivated by that moment, because Nehemiah saw something different. I've probably used this illustration before because it was a key moment in Janet's and my life. When we went to Atherton, I apologise if I've told this story before, but when we went to Atherton, we had no money, but we wanted to buy a house in Atherton. So we ended up seeing the cheapest house in Atherton. And I'm not even just saying almost the cheapest or one of the cheapest. No, it was the cheapest house in Atherton. Well, a house is probably a bit fancy of a title, really. In fact, it was being sold for land value. No, actually, it was being sold for less than land value, because the people buying it would have to remove the house. And so they sort of reduced the price a little bit so you could get rid of the rubbish that was on the land. And Janet and I looked at that house, and it was actually two houses, well, one house and one shack that had been kind of put together. And they didn't have a good day the day they put it together. And not only that, the kitchen
was just a cold water tap. I don't know, it might have had a hot water tap as well, I can't remember, but a makeshift kind of vanity thing that was underneath it. Then we walked into the bathroom. Bathroom, what a beautiful bathroom. There was this great big hole on the floor where the waste from the bath used to be. No bath. And just a couple of taps over the top of that. No shower curtain. And that wasn't so bad. That was one of the better bits of the house. Because in other parts, there was dry rot running right the way down the walls. And Janet and I looked at it and thought, this could be a really nice home. Mind, Janet was struggling even a little bit. We'd renovated some rough ones, but even Janet started to think, well, maybe. Janet's mum came to visit, and Janet's mum just about cried. What on earth are you doing to my daughter? Let alone my grandkids. But you know, within a very short space of time, as we looked at that place, all Janet and I could see was this beautiful, magnificent home sitting on this great big block of land, a beautiful camphor laurel tree out the front. And we hadn't done any work yet. But all we could see was the finished product. And we were excited. In fact, we would excitedly take people through the house. Can you see how awesome this house is? And everyone else is just shaking their heads. But within a very short space of time, that house became all that we had imagined it would be. That and even more, and I think it was just a beautiful home. As Nehemiah went around the walls, God had placed in him no longer a picture of the rubble, no longer a picture of the mess, but Nehemiah saw the completed walls. And what he needed to do then was to tell the people of Jerusalem, this is what you need to see. You need to see that the God who we serve can restore these walls. The God who we serve can restore these gates. And it is going to be more magnificent than you could imagine. As Nehemiah shared that, then all of a sudden the people did put on their hard hats. The people did pack their lunches and they got ready to do the work, because they were excited about the vision and the future that God had for them. Do you know, as we head into our future, as we head into our future as a church, and we've been talking a lot about it over the last little while, there is so much about our future that we don't know. Exactly, Brightwaters is going to need a new home to reside in and what that means for us as a church. Now, at this point in time, we don't have that clear vision of what God's calling us to, but when he gives a vision, we need to make sure that we wait upon the Lord, but we faithfully walk into the space that God has for us. And rather than seeing the struggles, we see God. Rather than seeing all the reasons we should say no, we see God's leading. And we stay faithful to that. In each of our lives, in each of our worlds, we've got many things that we struggle with. The battles are very real. But we've got to stop seeing things with our eyes. We need to see things with God's eyes. And rather than being people of the world who just see things as they are, we need to see things as they will be, because God has gone before us. When Nehemiah shared those words with his people, no longer were walls being built, although they were. People's hearts were being built. People's hopes were being built. People's love of God was being restored. There was so much being rebuilt as Nehemiah shared those words. As we look to our future, personal futures and the future of the church, as we look to God, he will restore our hearts, he will restore our souls, he will restore the joy of our spirit, and we'll be left praising God for the amazing things that he has done. Let's make sure that we walk in the confidence of knowing that God knows our future. Let's pray together. Father, today, we want to thank you for this great moment in history. This great moment when Nehemiah walks around the walls and instead of seeing things with his own eyes, he looks through your eyes. And in that moment, he can see what you are going to do. Father, would you give us a vision of what you are wanting to do? Would you give us a vision of the way in which we need to be faithful today, the things that you are asking of us today? And would you help us to walk in the confidence of knowing, regardless of what our eyes see, may our hearts see you, and may we respond appropriately to you. In this time of waiting, Father, may we be active in pursuing you.